This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show for your Monday. Matt and Brett here today. We're going to get right into it after a weekend of very big news throughout the Minnesota Senate. We find out that the Republican Party of Minnesota had been hiding a major outbreak within the Republican Senate Corps, as well as in their staff, and they had not told the DFL of this problem. Senator Susan Kent is kind enough to join us. Senate District 53, she is the Senate Minority Leader, and she's kind enough to take some time today. Hi, Senator.
Hi, Matt. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. I have to start off with when and how did you find out? Because no one told you on Thursday of last week during the special session that there was a coronavirus outbreak within the Republican Senate Corps, correct?
That is correct, yes. We found out, it was Friday night, and someone on my team had seen, I think it was a tweet from Brian Baxt at NPR. And he had the copy of that email in his tweet, and it was completely news to all of us. And just a gut punch. I mean, I can't even begin to tell you. It's like all of us had to sort of wrap our heads around what we were seeing.
It, as we've discovered through the weekend, there has been, I mean, this is slowly coming out what has happened here. I mean, there was a meeting on the 5th, then there was a big celebration dinner on the 5th, then there was a Republican-only staff meeting on last Tuesday, and it sounds like on Tuesday of last week, they had said something to the Republican caucus, correct?
So the email that went out to the staff went out on Tuesday. We know that. I'm not sure we heard that there were communications with members, Republican members. I did hear, for example, from one Republican member, like, you know, where'd you get that email? I didn't get that email. Well, the email that we saw was clearly to staff, you know? Okay. So, you know, how they were communicating with each other, I'm not sure. But the point is that they were not communicating with anybody else in the Senate. Unless people think this is partisan, there is a significant number of nonpartisan staff that makes the Senate run. And, you know, I am just as incensed on their behalf because they also were not informed.
Well, and I'll say this very bluntly. The fact that they had at no point contacted the minority leader and informed her of what was going on, the people that started making this political were the Republicans from the get-go with their email list, and that is that's an undeniable fact at this point. We heard early of two cases, Anderson and Senjum, that both have been diagnosed with coronavirus. Then the bombshell yesterday that the Senate Majority Leader Paul Gazelka himself, he also has been diagnosed, and he's in Florida right now. Has at any point did Senator Gazelka get in touch with you and say, "I'm sorry, hindsight being 2020, apologies, we should have said something"? Has he tried to contact you at all?
Well, so it's funny you ask. So I will say that he did call me on Wednesday morning before special session, and we had a conversation about special session to sort of, you know, plan and be on the same page. And now I find out that at that point he definitely had symptoms. He was in Florida. He was not going to be in the chamber on Thursday. None of this was disclosed. So, I mean, I don't feel like I need to ask him, "So where are you calling from right now?" And so clearly stuff was going on when we talked. So he didn't share any of that with me at that time. Like I said, I didn't learn anything until I actually did hear rumors that there might be some cases among some of their members as of late Thursday. But the fact that an email had gone out warning, you know, people to stay away in their party and nobody else was the surprise. I immediately did reach out to him, and we had a text exchange. And I'll just say that, you know, what he said to me in text was consistent with what he said publicly, which is, you know, to make excuses, to not in any way express any sort of regret that things should have been handled differently. I'm really glad that they apologized to the Lake Elmo Event Center that that hosted that event, because I think it's important that that communication happen. But, you know, none of that has been extended to anybody he works with in the Senate.
And before we give him too much of an out there, he had not called the Lake Elmo Event Center until the media had asked him about the party, which, once again, they had not disclosed on Friday. I think they found out, I think Fox 9 found out about that party on Saturday late in the day. And his first comment was, oh, yeah, I forgot to call them. So this is not only disrespecting the DFL caucus. That's a private business, I'm presuming, in Lake Elmo that was, you know, basically a super spreader event. And at no point did anyone in the Republican Party feel it was necessary to call that business and let them know, hey, you probably need to close down and get checked.
Yes, very good point. But let me correct you on the little timeline thing there.
Okay.
The Senate Republican Caucus media team sent out a statement on Saturday night where they talked. They were trying to justify not having emailed us and that everybody's fine and we don't need to worry about anything. And they went through the rather lengthy discussion about the organizing caucus on Thursday, the 5th. That was held in a hearing room, and they claimed that they were masked and socially distanced with plenty of space. I will just, you know, offer a little editorial comment here that we've all watched them on the Senate floor where they are almost never masked and never observing social distancing. So it's a little, it's sort of, you know, is a little hard to believe that suddenly they are doing that behind closed doors, but I throw that out there. But in the midst of this statement that they issued on Saturday night, they never came out and said, oh, and by the way, we then went to a big event later. You know, that came out through a leak to the media on Sunday. Okay. And so it was that really kind of pushed me over the edge, that just said, this has gone too far. You know, clearly they've been behaving in ways that are high risk, that put the rest of us at risk. They are covering it up. You know, I mean, the only reason they would not be forthcoming about any of this stuff is because they know it's going to look bad for them politically. So the fact that they didn't include us with an email, the fact that they didn't let us know about the event on Thursday night, that's about hiding it for political reasons. And then finally, this is all just such disregard for people's health. You know, that this is not honest with Minnesotans, and then it is a total lack of regard. And it's not just about like my health and the health of other members that are there. Again, I point to all the staff that are there. There are our families as well. And then finally, you know, we all live in communities around the state of Minnesota. So when we come together and spend time in the same room, breathing each other's droplets, and then we go back out across the state, the Senate becomes a super spreader event. Mm-hmm. And that's not good. I mean, that has been going back to February and March. I have been pounding the table that we need to take that seriously, because we know from previous years, if there's a flu, if there's a, you know, a virus or something going around, if somebody gets it in the Capitol, everybody's got it. It's a very tight, literally physically tight, lots of people crammed in kind of setting. And so, you know, we should take this seriously, but they have not. And that's why it's just real clear that they're not in a position to, because ultimately the Senate Majority Leader is the CEO of the whole Senate over the nonpartisan staff and both partisan caucuses. And, you know, if they're not going to take it seriously and, you know, have the protocols in place and enforce those rules, because the legislature is exempt from executive orders and from, say, St. Paul city ordinances, right? We make our own rules and we have to enforce them. But if the people who are making those rules and enforcing them don't take it seriously, don't think this matters, don't think that our healthcare professionals are fighting an incredibly painful, difficult, challenging fight that is going to overwhelm them in a matter of weeks, especially if we don't do something about it, it's just overwhelming.
Senator Susan Kent, the Senate Minority Leader, joining us right now. We should also mention, has anyone followed up with Senator Gazelka if he contacted the airline that he took down to Florida? And do we know if he is actually quarantining? We've heard of numerous Republicans say, especially during the campaign trail, oh, I'm quarantining, and then they never really quarantined.
Yeah, I mean, that is That is a good question. I don't know. I would hope that, you know, the airlines would be asking those questions because they have a vested interest to make sure. And we've seen that happen in the past. Because I think the statements that came out both from Senator Gazelka himself, but then also from the press office were contradictory. So we don't have a clear sense of when he was on that airplane relative to when he knew what was going on. Well, we should have known anyway.
Well, and the crazy part about this, and I want to get to your call for him to resign his leadership position, is what you've just described is that you own a restaurant and you know that there has been some, you know, wait staff that have gotten coronavirus. So you tell the wait staff, hey, you've got coronavirus, but you go out of your way to not tell the kitchen staff, oh, we have an outbreak on the floor, even though there's tons of interaction between the two groups. Yeah, I know you, Senator. I have known you for a few years here. You are not someone who's knee-jerk. You're not someone who does this stuff lightly. Your call for him to step down, I think, is based in reality. And the truth is that it's not just a violation of protocol with the DFL here. It's the fact that they clearly do not care about anyone in Minnesota outside of their own party members.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, it's funny because I was hearing from some people on Saturday that, you know, that somebody should call for him to resign. And I was like, oh, no, you know, no. But it really was. It was once I heard about that party that had happened. And I knew that, you know, they had written a very elaborate statement on Saturday night that all about part of the Thursday night activities. And they completely clearly left that out. That to me, that just demonstrated that they were not willing to be honest about this. And, you know, if you can't trust people to be forthcoming when we are all in this same very hard boat together, how do you have the trust to work together and to rely on them for your safety? Because that is exactly where the rest of us in the Senate are.
And it brings up what at one point was just an eye roll moment. A tweet that Senator Gazelka had sent out on Thursday when all of a sudden he was saying, oh, we don't see any need here to stop the governor's emergency powers during the pandemic, where he said in the tweet, I've always treated coronavirus serious. That is what he said. Yeah. And as he was tweeting that, he knew that the House Republicans or the Senate Republicans had an outbreak within their group. They knew that the Senate staff on the Republican side had an outbreak. And he'd already talked to you directly by your own timeline and had failed to mention this, which makes now what he said on that Thursday, just there's no other way to describe it. It's a bold-faced lie. He does not always treat coronavirus seriously. And I think he and the Republican Party are a reason why this pandemic is getting worse in this state.
Right. I mean, I was just reading the recap from today's briefing from the Department of Health and the governor. And they are saying that, you know, Minnesota is probably at about 70% compliance on mask wearing. And that probably is very, like, highly variable depending on what part of the state you're in. It's probably up over 90% in some areas and down at around 40 in others. And, you know, the problem with that is, and that's why we're seeing the numbers spiking in our counties so severely. Mm-hmm. And that is because this has become some sort of cultural symbol, you know, from the president all the way on down, and certainly, you know, my colleagues in the Senate. And when I have asked about mandating mask wearing in the Senate, I keep being talked to about liberty. And, you know, I just keep thinking, you know, yeah, people have the liberty to, you know, drink themselves silly. They do not have the liberty to get in a car and drive on the highways and put other people's lives at risk, right? That is the distinction. And if you don't want to wear a mask in wherever you are, if you're not putting anybody else at risk, that's your choice. But, you know, as the old saying goes, you know, your liberty to swing your arms ends at the end of my nose, you know.
Mm-hmm. We do know, and I don't think they've identified, there apparently is a House Republican member now who has also been diagnosed. I don't think we have the name of that individual yet. Have we had anyone on the DFL side since this crisis broke out with this Republican created crisis broke out? Have we had anything in regards to any words there in regards to anyone on the DFL side being sick?
I have not heard of anybody, you know, it has been reported that there were two House members earlier in the summer, and then our Senator Dan Sparks, you know, issued a press release several weeks ago.
Yeah.
But, you know, we are maintaining distance. We are not campaigning, you know, mask-free with a bunch of people. You know, we have recognized the seriousness of this, and we have implemented strategies to avoid spreading it to other people and to avoid spreading it among each other. So, you know, the fact that Senator Sparks had it, you know, hanging out at home in South Austin, I mean, in South Minnesota, it was never an issue as to whether he had threatened anybody else. And he did come out with a press release, but he wasn't with anybody else to create an unsafe workplace. That's the difference.
It's just the lies. It's the constant lies. It's I mean, there's no other way to describe it. It's not a misunderstanding. It's not a, you know, it's a different in perspective. No, it's just outright lies from the Republicans about this pandemic outbreak within their own group. Senator Susan Kent, the minority leader, all my best to you, to all the DFLers in the Senate and the House as well. And by all means, if we have any news on this, I might get back in touch with you again. Okay.
Anytime, Matt. Thank you so much. It's always great to talk to you.
Thank you very much. The minority leader in the Minnesota Senate is Susan Kent from the DFL, Senate District 53. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
Hi, I'm Alicia Luther-Tom, Certified Financial Planner.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Okay, I want to make sure we have, and to my knowledge, I don't think this has been made public yet. Susan Kent, the minority leader, made a point of saying on Wednesday of last week, after Paul Gazelka had heard about the outbreak within the Republican Senate Corps, he talked with her and said nothing at all about this, about the fact that he was sick, nothing. And then when she finally did find out and they did have communication, it sounds like he was more accusatory than apologetic. He lied. The Republican Party lied repeatedly about this. And I don't give a rat's caboose about one or two Republicans who have seen the light and all of a sudden now are saying, hey, guys, face masks are important. Hey, great. Glad from here on out, you're going to take the pandemic seriously. You're about 6 months too late, you jackasses. And I am not going to let that go. You've endangered people's lives, for God's sakes. And the reason why none of you said any of this prior to 11-3 is because your twisted, broken base would have looked at you saying, hey, wear a mask and social distance as catering to the liberals. And so to make sure you didn't lose any votes of your psychopathic voting core, you basically went out there and you downplayed masks, you downplayed social distancing, you downplayed any efforts to try to make us safe from coronavirus. And now your own party is imploding and you can't stop lying. Just pathetic. And yeah, Paul Gazelka, at the least, should be resigning his leadership position. You can't trust the lying bastard. You can't trust the lying bastard. You get that? Paul? You can't trust him. You can't trust him. Period. You can't. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. And God, I want the Democrats to be in charge of the Senate. I don't want them to be in charge of the Senate because you idiots killed off three or four of your senators and we had to go into a special election. I mean, for God's sakes, you've got some senators who are not young. There's lots of Republicans who have pre-existing conditions. You know, you're any, hey, stop pointing out for 6 months that we weren't taking this seriously. Now that we're all sick, oh, the heck with you. I hope you heal, but I'm not going to let your massive level of hypocrisy go, for God's sakes. And there's a reason why. we need to be taking this seriously, and we needed to be taking this seriously back in April. 12 more COVID-19 deaths reported in Minnesota health authorities on Monday, along with 7,444 new lab-confirmed infections. Reminder, Mondays are the light days. 7,444 new infections. A record 1,500-plus patients with COVID-19 from any state are now occupying inpatient hospital beds in Minnesota, according to an update Monday from the state's pandemic response dashboard. That includes a total of 778 COVID-19 admissions on November 1st. The latest totals include 324 people admitted to intensive care due to breathing problems or other complications from the infections. The share of ICU patients in Minnesota who have COVID-19 has increased to 29%. The dashboard shows that 1,121 of the 1,429 immediately available ICU beds are occupied by patients with COVID-19 or unrelated medical or surgical issues. Other 408 ICU beds surge could be ready within 72 hours if needed. I'd get them ready. And by the way, and I'm sorry if you live in the Dakotas. I'm sorry if you live in the Dakotas and you are in a state with a bunch of idiots that are in charge. But I think you got to start looking at the fact that we probably, considering how bad this is getting in Minnesota, should make sure the Minnesota medical facilities are for the Minnesota patients. Because the last thing I need to hear is a Minnesotan goes to a Minnesota emergency room and they're told there's no room at the inn here because half the people in their emergency room or in their ICU are basically from the Dakotas because their states are run so piss poorly, it's not even funny. Did you see that interview on CNN with the nurse? Do you want to know what the impact of Republicans downplaying the pandemic is? A nurse who they interviewed because she was tweeting out that they were having people in ICU. People are dying, and they're dying of coronavirus, and they are angry because they're like, this isn't real. This can't be happening. There must be something else going on. And they're like, no, you're dying of corona. They're dying of coronavirus. And instead of talking to family members and loved ones, all they're doing is getting angry because they think that the nurse who's trying to save them is part of the conspiracy. Just insane. The story out of, one of the rural papers. John Dahl knows what humble pie tastes like, and it isn't good. The 49-year-old New London man spent nearly a week in the hospital in May after being diagnosed with COVID-19 after he left the Caris Health Rice Memorial Hospital in Wilmer. The nurses told him he wouldn't be back to his regular routine in a couple of months. Dahl poo-pooed that idea and told him he'd be back to normal in a couple of weeks. It didn't happen. I've eaten my words and then some, he said. Humble pie is very bitter. It's been around 6 months since Dahl left the hospital. His energy level still has not fully rebounded. It's difficult for him to do anything extra tasks at home after putting in a full day of work. And most concerning, his lung capacity is only functioning at about 80% of normal, and they might be as good as it ever gets again. Might be as good as it only gets ever again. A reduction in the lung capacity is something I'm going to have to live with. It's a whole new way of trying to make my life new. In an earlier interview, shortly after he got out of the hospital this spring, Dahl talked about how he was coping with fatigue and other physical challenges of COVID that kept him from his busy work schedule. Folks, we don't even know the beginnings of coronavirus. But here we are, and we are just dealing with the Republican Party of Minnesota, the senators, the House members, Jennifer Carnahan, there has been an insane amount of downplaying of this crisis. Not because there really wasn't a crisis, was because Donald Trump said there really wasn't. His voting base, which are a cult, said, yeah, no problem. And you guys, terrified. Of losing those votes in election time, gleefully downplayed, dismissed, ignored, and lied about coronavirus. And you still are doing it. You can't stop yourselves. The Republican Party of Minnesota is not responsible for coronavirus, but they sure as hell are responsible for a lot of the sick illnesses and a lot of the deaths that we are having in this state because they played politics with people's lives. And Paul Gazelka should be gone. Jennifer Carnahan should be gone. Kurt Dowd should be gone. They can put other people in charge, but you have got broken leadership on the GOP. And maybe, if I can give you one last little hint here, Republicans, learn two words. I'm sorry. You're pathetic in your inability to apologize. It's pathetic. I'm sorry that it's so difficult for you to learn how to say I'm sorry, but learn how to say it, you self-centered, arrogant jackasses. Ta-da! 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. When we come back, we head to Wisconsin. Pat Kreitlow, Up North News. We'll get into the latest with him in coronavirus and other issues in Wisconsin. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. I should mention, and I trust John Tevlin quite a bit. He's, of course, the former reporter for the Star Tribune. He has a tweet out that a reporter in Florida is monitoring Gazelka, and he isn't in quarantine. What? How could anyone look at the Senate Majority Leader with anything other than, I mean, just, I'm sorry. This story just keeps getting more and more bizarre. We'll have to keep track of it. Once again, we'll spotlight Susan Kent and make sure that that interview is available a little bit later on. The Senate Minority Leader talking about Paul Gazelka and the Republican Senate basically not letting the Democrats know there was a major outbreak of coronavirus within their ranks. We'll make that a spotlight interview. We'll also spotlight Pat Kreitlow. Pat is kind enough to join us. Up North News, Wisconsin is where he is based out of. And he's kind enough today to join us to talk about some issues going on in Wisconsin with the news. Hi, Pat. How are you today?
Hey, Matt. Doing great. Thank you. Good to talk to you again.
Good to have you back, my friend. Okay, so let's establish where Wisconsin had been one of the worst states in the nation. Where are you guys at right now? Is it getting any better as far as coronavirus right now?
No, it's not getting any better at all. And I will say that we also have one up on you in terms of legislators being secretive about outbreaks. We, back on October 23rd, reported about how Republican members of the legislature and their staffers were being treated for COVID-19. But again, we're trying to keep that hush-hush. So it was a real case of deja vu when I heard what was happening over there. For the rest of our state, again, we continue to set daily records, not today because Mondays are typically slow, but on Saturday, nearly 7,800 new cases, in a single day. And we've had 320 some deaths in the past week. Our numbers are just about 2,700 dead total. And now we are at the point where we have nurses and administrators who haven't worked a floor shift in forever, putting on scrubs to help fill the gap because of staff that are quarantined or sick. And no disrespect to them, but do you want to be treated by somebody that hasn't been working the floor of an ICU for a while?
Yeah.
It's something that's sadly just going to continue to get worse before it gets better, even as our state Supreme Court today has a conservative group making arguments looking to strike down Governor Tony Evers' latest mask requirement.
At least it's not North Dakota where they're calling the sick doctors and nurses back in.
Yeah.
My goodness.
Right.
Who is behind this lawsuit that's gone to the Supreme Court in Wisconsin over the mask mandate?
A lot of the suits are brought by a group called the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty. It's a conservative, far-right legal group funded by the Bradley Foundation, which has been funding right-wing groups around the country based out of Milwaukee. And it basically was a war of analogies in the state Supreme Court today. There was the conservative justice on the court who likened it to giving his son his camera phone to take pictures for 10 minutes, but he took pictures of the rainbow for 20 minutes because the rainbow was still there. That's the argument they're making as to why Governor Evers can't be allowed to have a second or a third emergency order during the same pandemic, when the analogy I would use is, if you put up a tornado warning, let's say for Eden Prairie, and, you know, an hour later, that same storm system spun off a tornado near Stillwater, under their argument, you're only allowed one declaration of emergency for that storm system, so you can't warn Stillwater about something that you warned Eden Prairie about earlier. So these conservative justices will have to pick one of these analogies and decide whether to strike down a mask requirement that, frankly, is going to expire at the end of this week anyway. It's all academic.
It does lead to the question. I mean, even in Minnesota now, after the debacle with the Republican Senate, you do have Republicans now coming out of their hole and saying, hey, guys, you know, I know we haven't really been pro-mask before, but we really need the masks. Aren't Republicans, I mean, if your state's having this much problem, are the Republicans showing any contriteness to basically come on out and say, okay, we might have been against this, but we definitely need to kind of start installing these mandates?
No, because long before Donald Trump came along, dating back to 2011 and the infamous Act 10 protests at the state capitol, the Republican Party of Wisconsin has always been, you know, never apologize, never surrender, never compromise, never. And in this case, after this election, never admit defeat, even if you've been defeated. You know, this legislature is about to launch an investigation into the election, even though there are no documented cases of fraud worth reporting. So, no, we haven't seen any move toward a legislature, which has not met since April 15th, to do anything about this pandemic.
Wow. God, they're just inept over there. Is the Wisconsin Supreme Court, any idea which way they're going to go on this?
They probably will strike it down there. They are a 4-3 conservative court, and it certainly appeared that all four of the conservative lawmakers are going to say that the governor cannot extend a second emergency beyond the original 60 days that the law allows. After 60 days, you have to get the legislature to sign off on it. Well, as the governor and his supporters have noted, it's tough to get the legislature to sign up on day 61 to continue the safeguards that save people's lives if they refuse to come to the Capitol and meet.
And people aren't in the streets with pitchforks and torches at this point.
Thank goodness no, because if they come out, you know, they risk getting terribly sick here, unfortunately.
That's probably a good call then. Pat Kreitlow is joining us right now. Of course, is Up North News. Pat, I want to talk a little bit about there were some early squawking from certain Republicans in the state that there might be a need to throw out the presidential vote totals for Joe Biden, who won Wisconsin, and install electors who are automatically going to vote for Trump, even though there was no evidence of any wrongdoing in the ballot box in Wisconsin. I haven't heard much more of it, but there were one or two Republicans who were kind of, hey guys, what do you think about usurping democracy? And how has that gone? It doesn't sound like it's going to go anywhere in Wisconsin.
It's not going to go anywhere, and it was just so insulting that this particular assembly representative from a suburban Milwaukee district, here's his quote. He said, "You either have to toss this election out and have a whole new election, or we have our delegates to the Electoral College vote for the person they think legitimately should have won." It matches with a strategy that had been rumored across the country that that Republican controlled legislatures might try to put up their own slate of electors for the Electoral College. Now, since that time, other Republican legislators here have put cold water on that. They've acknowledged that there are no instances of fraud to report. However, we just got word a few minutes ago that the Wisconsin Elections Commission has nearly completed receiving all of the county canvasses, so they can now tell the Trump campaign officially, they've calculated the cost and said, if you want a recount, it will cost you $7.9 million up front, have to be paid by 5 p.m. on Friday. Now, paying something up front in full is not something I believe Donald Trump has ever done. So no. I don't think that's going to happen. But even if he writes that check, there are two recent statewide recounts in Wisconsin. Each one moved a few hundred votes.
Oh, yeah.
Not the 20,000 that it would take to wipe out Joe Biden's margin here.
Well, and we had that lesson here with the Frank and Coleman recount. You know, it's like, sure, if you're within a few hundred, there might be a chance, but 20,000, that's, unless there's an obvious error, which would have probably been caught on election night, there's no way in the world you're going to make up that many votes.
No, and whether it was simply bravado in the hopes that something would spring up, or if it was to be really cynical here, if it's just a way to keep the base energized so that they all concentrate on holding those two Senate seats in Georgia come January, whatever the strategy behind it, they have not received nearly the popular support or benefit of the doubt or anything like that. So I expect these things all to fizzle out sooner rather than later.
Oh, and by the way, I think you're spot on. If they have to pay up front from the Trump campaign, he wants that money. He knows he's not going to be able to win. He's not going to be able to overturn enough states. There's no way in the planet he's going to spend that money. So he'll just shrug and accept it, Wisconsin, at that point.
Right, and continue to say that it's rigged, like he has said about every election that he didn't win, every primary that he didn't win, every Emmy that his TV show didn't get. He said it was rigged. That's just his default, and I can't believe more people don't recognize all the times he has said it in the past.
And he'll say it when the trials come through as well. So right. he will. That's my comment, yeah. Not your Pat. You're the journalist. I'm the train chimp. Okay, so let's turn to the other Wisconsin story, which we haven't had time to cover because it's just been so much in the news cycle. Foxconn. Now, I've talked with Molly Beck over the Journal Sentinel about the Foxconn over the years, when it first was proposed, when they went through this, when it became very clear that you were never going to get the tax dollars out of this thing that you were going to get. It sounds like in the last few months, though, it's become pretty clear that what the Republicans and Scott Walker had tried to put through with Foxconn, with all this taxpayer money in Wisconsin, it's a pipe dream that it's just never going to materialize as they promised. Is that a fair assessment?
Oh, absolutely. They started downgrading the plant long before the pandemic. This thing that was supposed to create 13,000 jobs did not qualify for state tax credits recently, because at this point, to get tax credits, all they had to do was create 520 jobs. To this point, they have hired 281 people. So they're a little short of the 13,000 they promised for the $4.5 billion of taxpayer money that theoretically could go to them if they had met all of their goals. So this project continues more and more to show itself as nothing more than the longest lasting. This is the longest lasting strategy to win the 2018 elections that's still going on. It has lasted longer than the caravan of illegal aliens that were coming for the border that they talked about back in 2018. That rumor fizzled out the day after the election. The Foxconn one goes on and on and on.
But there was, I don't know if you know the number off the top of your head here. There are some guaranteed tax dollars that went to Foxconn. Did they ever revisit that? Or how much money did Foxconn actually get from Wisconsin?
That I don't know off the top of my head. I should get that for you. It's obviously not nearly, the $4.5 billion that could come. But the big kick in the pants that Wisconsin taxpayers have received to this point is that so much money was diverted away from transportation projects here up north and all across Wisconsin in order to build all of these roads and other infrastructure around this Racine County campus, not too far from the Chicago metro area. And so you have essentially you remember the old bridge to nowhere. These are the roads to nowhere going to a massive complex that, according to an internal state memo, could not possibly be a factory that would fabricate glass for iPhones as it was originally, sold to us as. And instead, it is something that is being used primarily for storage at this point. And I want to put in this caveat, because we're not rooting against jobs in Racine County. No. In fact, it would be great to have that renegotiated to say, look, you're going to build the smaller screens. That's fine. You're only going to employ a few hundred. That's fine. Let's have the requisite number of tax credits for that. But please stop. Stop saying you're going to have 13,000 people here. Nobody believes you anymore.
Do they do that just because they know that the Republicans thrive off that? That as long as the company keeps saying that they're still going to do that, then it's just not a complete failure at this point?
Well, because at this point they count on people's long-term memory not being as sharp when they say things like, "Well, the pandemic, really really took a hit, and Democrats have been fighting Foxconn, from day one." Well, it was actually Foxconn itself that very early on downgraded what was going to be made at that plant. And as I mentioned before, that downgrade and the slow hiring happened way before the pandemic. But again, they can continue to try to blame other things in order to try to divert attention from their own empty promises.
Pat, how do people get in touch with Up North News?
Yeah, it's a common name, so I want to make sure I get the site right for everybody. It's Up North News WI for Wisconsin. That's upnorthnewswi.com, or on your favorite social media feed, just search for Up North News WI.
upnorthnewswi.com. Find it there. Great source for Wisconsin news. Bookmark it and follow it daily. Pat Kreitlow, thank you very much, Pat. I appreciate the time today, and all my best.
No, anytime, Matt. Thank you.
The managing editor for Up North News, WI. Let's take a break. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. What a freaking weekend of news. The great thing, I will say this, Brett. The thing that's nice is this last week was it just didn't feel so heavy. You know what I mean? It wasn't like it was the every 15 minutes, "Oh, there goes Donald Trump's pants." You know, you're like, "Oh my God." It this last week, because Donald was throwing a temper tantrum, because basically all he was doing was basically, he wasn't doing any work issues at all. All he was doing was sending his lawyers out to make ignorant arguments. It started to feel like it was slowing down. It started to feel like there was some normalcy out there. I want to bring up one thing here because I don't know how you're going to do Thanksgiving. Now, I know already that there are going to be Republicans who are going out there and say, "Those namby-pamby liberals are trying to take away Thanksgiving. Well, I'm going to have 90 of my family together and we're going to breathe all over each other." And then, of course, that guy in 3 weeks is going to be like, "How dare you point out that all the family members I had at my house for Thanksgiving have coronavirus and some of them have died. You're just cruel for pointing out the fact that I taunted you and thumbed your nose at your suggestions." We already know it's going to happen. Folks, try to limit the amount of interaction you have with people on Thanksgiving. This will skyrocket out of control, and I get it. There is not a Democrat I know that doesn't want schools reopened and doesn't want businesses open back again and doesn't want normalcy in our daily lives, not having to grab a face mask every time I want to go get, a Coke at a store, for God's sakes. We all want to return back, but you will not be able to do that if you do not take this seriously. And when you look at North Dakota, is the worst place on the planet for coronavirus. South Dakota's like number 7 because of Republican intentional ignorance. And reminder, this all began with Sturgis. Things in the Dakotas and in the upper Midwest started going out of control with Sturgis. Intentionally making people sick. Try your best to avoid large crowds on Thanksgiving. And I know it's not easy. I will say Zoom, who doesn't like a Zoom call? I'm with you. It's tough. But if it's the option you got, here's a deal. Zoom has announced it's lifting its timed meetings limit for Thanksgiving. In a tweet, the company said the normal 40-minute restriction on its free meetings will be lifted globally from midnight on Thanksgiving Day through 6 a.m. the next day on the 27th. It will basically, you can make some family gatherings that they don't get cut short. So you will actually be able to, you know, through Zoom, at least have family together. I myself am taking some time. I'm going to make up, I mean, we have people who usually come over for our Thanksgiving dinner. They're not coming over this year. We've kind of already talked about that. So I'm making to-go bins, and I'll have them for them. And when they let me know when you're outside, I'll take it, put it on the back porch. We'll wave at you through the glass door. You come by, pick them up. Enjoy. Saw a neighbor across the street. I said, how are you guys doing? They got a young kid, very cute kid, Parker, very cute young boy. It's fun watching that kid grow up. And I said, what are you doing? And so, well, we're not going with grandparents this year. I said, well, you're doing the right thing. How about I bring over Thanksgiving? And so I'm going to make enough Thanksgiving, and I'm going to bring them a full meal. Why? Because that's what you need to do. And that isn't that what Thanksgiving really is? If you can. Final thing today, I wish I had time to get to Mary Franson being just Mary Franson, but I'll share that. I've already shared that story from Blue Stem Prairie. I'll get to retweet that, repost that a little bit later on. Brett, I can barely stand at this point. I made a mistake yesterday.
What'd you do?
Maybe I should just let that hang like that.
Oh, yeah. A minute 30 of silence.
Yep.
I made a mistake.
And I can barely walk right now. Have a great weekend, everybody. I went out, of course, my continued exploration of the parks of the metro area and in the region continued. I went to Lake Rebecca. Do you know that one? That's out on 12. Just right out Delano, right on the border of Hennepin County, Wright County, I believe it is. And was out there. It was a beautiful park. But because the one main trail is like a 7-mile trail, I had to actually ended up going like 4.5 miles yesterday. Even my dog was looking at me like, okay, what's the deal, Dad? And I'm like, I can't come back to the car. The Sherpas have run out of supplies. It's a sad part for me that, I mean, only a few years ago, I hiked around Washington, D.C., and I didn't have this much problem. Granted, it was cold, but still, I'm having trouble standing up. Some beautiful pictures, though. I got some great shots from Lake Rebecca State Park. I'll add those to the social media. Look for those a little bit later on. Tomorrow's show, Robert Burrill is back. He's going to be doing a live album. We'll talk to him about that. That comes up tomorrow. Until then, have a great day, and see ya.